Against the theft and the jealousy and the covetousness, weight that in the pan as well. Sin lay not in the concrete act, but in the will. Behind the woman's recitation lay the cardinal sin, of which these mean transgressions were but the visible signs. One could return a brooch or visit a parent, but unless the inner flaw were healed, repentance, however sincere the moment, would shrivel like the seed upon the bad ground. And I have taken pleasure with men who were not my lawful husband. That being the worst-kept secret in Oberhochwald. Hildegard Müller stalked men with the same cool deliberation with which Herr Manfred stalked the stags and boars that adorned the walls of Hofhochwald. Dietrich had a sudden and disconcerting vision of what might dangle from Hildegard's trophy wall. Trophies! Ah, that was the inner sin, pride, not lust. Long after the fleshy pleasures must have palled, the stalking and capture of men remained an affirmation that she could have whatever she desired whenever she desired it. Her kindness to the Irish pilgrim, too, not paradox, but confirmation. She had done it for show, so that others could admire her generosity. Even her endless recitation of venial sins was a prideful thing. She was bragging. For every weakness, a strength. And so, for pride, humility. Her penance, he decided, would require the usual restitutions. Return the brooch, restore the flower, visit her father. Have no other man than her husband. Treat any distressed pilgrim, however mean his station, with the same charity as she had shown the Irish lordling. But she must also, as a lesson in humility, scrub the flagstone floor of the church nave. And this must be done in secret, lest she take pride even in her penances. Afterward, robing in the sacristy for the morning mass, Dietrich paused with his cincture half tied. There was a sound, like that of a bumblebee, at the edge of his hearing. Drawn to the window, he saw in the distance wolf-leaf singers and acorn jays flying in mad gyres above the place where earlier had glowed the pale luminescence. The glow had either faded or was now insensible against the brightening sky. But the vista seemed odd in some indefinable manner. There was a pinchedness to the outlook, as if the forest had been creased and folded on itself. At the base of Church Hill a knot of people milled as witlessly as the birds above. Gregor and Theresia stood by the smithy in agitated conversation with Lorenz. Their hair was wild and unkempt, sticking out from their heads, and their clothing clung to them as if wet. Others were about as well, but the usual morning work had come to a standstill. The smithy's fire was unlit, and the sheep bleated in their pen, the sheep boys nowhere in sight. The pall of smoke that usually marked the charcoal kiln deep in the forest was absent. The humming grew distinctly louder as Dietrich approached the window, touching the glass lightly with a fingernail. He felt a vibration. Startled, he pulled away. Dietrich passed a hand through his locks, only to feel his hair writhe like a nest of snakes. The cause of these curiosities was waxing in strength as the sound and size of a galloping horse grew with its approach, which analogy would argue that the source of the impetus was drawing nearer. There can be no motion in a body, Buridan had argued, unless an actor impresses an impetus. Dietrich frowned, finding the thought disturbing. Something was approaching. He turned to the window to resume vesting, and paused with one hand on the red chasuble. Amber! Dietrich remembered. Amber! Electron, as the Greeks called it, when rubbed against fur, impressed an impetus to the fur that caused it to move in much the same way as his hair. Buridan had demonstrated it at Paris while Dietrich had been in studies. The master had found such delight in instruction that he had foregone the doctorate, and had become from his fees that great anomaly, a scholar never in want. Dietrich saw him, now in memory, Rubbing the amber vigorously against the cat's skin, his mouth pulled back in an unconscious grin. Dietrich studied his own image in the window. God was rubbing amber against the world. Somehow the thought excited him, as if he were on the verge of uncovering a form previously occult. A dizzy feeling like standing atop the belfry. Of course, God was not rubbing the world, but something was happening that was like rubbing the world with amber.
Dietrich stepped to the sacristy door and looked into the sanctuary, where the Minorite was finishing the altar preparations.
Joachim had thrown his cowl back, and the tight black curls ringing his tonsure danced to the same unseen impetus. He moved with that lithe grace that betokened gentle birth. Joachim had never known the villain's hut or the liberties of the free towns. The greater wonder when such a man, heir to important fiefs, dedicated his life to poverty. Joachim turned slightly, and the light from the clerestory highlighted fine, almost womanly features, set incongruously beneath shaggy brows that grew together over the nose. Among those who measured the beauty of men, Joachim might be accounted beautiful. Joachim and Dietrich locked gazes for a moment, before the monk turned to the credence table to fetch two candlesticks used for the miselecta.
As the Minorite's hands approached the copper prickets, sparks arced forth to dance on his fingertips.
Joachim jerked and reared his arm. God's curse on this wealth!
Dietrich stepped forward and seized the arm. Be reasonable, Joachim. I've had these prickets since many years, and never have they bitten anyone before. If God is displeased with them, why wait until now?
Because God has finally lost patience with a church in love with Mammon.
Mammon?
Dietrich gestured around the wooden church. From beams and rafters, wild faces looked down on them. In the lancet windows, narrow saints in colored glass scowled, or smiled, or raised a hand in blessing.
This is hardly Avignon.
He stooped to squint at the chaste metalwork of the candlesticks, the high row emblazoned on the mother pelican. He stretched a tentative forefinger to the candlestick. When it came within a thumb's length of the base, there was a snap, and a spark appeared in the air between fingertip and candlestick. Though he had known what would happen, he pulled away as quickly as had Joachim. His fingertip felt as if pierced by a hot needle. He stuck the digit in his mouth to soothe it and turned to Joachim. Oh. He took the finger out and inspected it.
A small hurt, he announced, seeming greater only through surprise.
It had felt much like with the aquamanil, only stronger.
Further argument that the mover was drawing nearer.
But it is entirely material. A moment ago, I recalled a trick with amber and fur that creates a similar effect.
But the small lightnings...
Lightning, said Dietrich. A new thought had struck him. He rubbed his finger absently.
Joachim! Could this essence be of the same species as the lightning itself?
He grinned broadly and touched the candlestick again, drawing another arc from it.
Fire from earth!
He laughed, and the Minorite drew away from him.
Imagine a water wheel rimmed with fur, he told the monk, rubbing against amber plates. We might generate this essence, this electronicus, and could we but learn to control it, we could command the very lightning.
The lightning struck without warning.
Dietrich felt fire run through his entire being. Beside him, the Minorite arched his back, his eyes bulging wide and his lips pulling back from his teeth.
Sparks leapt between the two candlesticks. A great burst of light washed through the stained-glass lancets in the north wall of the church, casting rainbows. Saints and prophets blazed in glory. Mary, Leonard, Catherine, Margaret of Antioch, bright as the sun. Radiances streamed through their images and played across the dim interior, speckling the statues and columns with gold and yellow and red and white, so that they seemed almost to move. Joachim fell to his knees and bowed, covering his face against the radiant windows. Dietrich knelt also, but looked everywhere at once, trying to take it all in. An avalanche of thunder followed upon the flash, and the bells in the tower pealed a mad, arrhythmic clanging.
The timbers of the church creaked and moaned, and wind rushed through the vises and passageways under the roof, howling like a beast. Griffins and wyverns growled, cavern dwarves groaned, window glass shrieked and cracked into spider webs.